I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to this. It's the Rugby Dungeon, and I am delighted on Valentine's Day of all days to be joined by United States fly half and South Sharks fly half, currently recovering from an injury, AJ McGinty. How are you, mate?
Good, thanks. Doing well. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Why are you here on Valentine's Day?
My girlfriend's actually in America, and she's working in America, so we just get trips over throughout the year, but got the flower sent into her office.
Is she American?
She is American, yeah. Met her when I was over in university there. So, yeah, she's going to be moving over at the end of this summer. I said that last summer, but then she got a new job. So
whereabouts is she?
She's in Atlanta. She lives in Atlanta.
I see. Now, I know an accent when I hear one, and that is a thick thick Atlanta, Georgia accent which you're sporting there.
I wish.
So how often are you going over there?
At the moment, well, because I've throughout the year I got over before Christmas, and then just previously got over 3 weeks ago when I first got the injury. So and then she's coming over in March, and then she'll be moving over in the summer, and I probably would have gone over for a game with the US.
Yeah.
But with the knee injury, I haven't been able to.
Now that's a good point. Now with your US commitments, are you allowed normal player release for, you know, the American version of the Six Nations, which is currently going on now?
Yeah, it's always quite tough because I think obviously I want to play both games, but they fall on the same date, and you're always going to let someone down. So it's kind of always a like sticky situation. But I think this year I would have gone for during the LV,
yeah,
and played that first test, and then I would have come back. That was kind of the proposed plan. But anything that clashes with the Premiership at this stage
is tough, isn't it?
It's tough, and especially actually the autumn tests are difficult as well. But I'd missed them the previous year, and I was actually had a sore hamstring, but I still played during that window.
Yeah.
So I didn't get into any serious trouble about it, but it was just you're not supposed to do that. So this year went over for them, and they're actually in Europe. So
yeah, I guess with the tier two nations, it's kind of, you've got to be pragmatic both as a player and as a club releasing your guys.
Yeah, you know, it is difficult because, you know, I think World Rugby are pushing for the Pacific Island teams and the tier two nations, and I think that the regulation nine law is good, that if you get this regulation or the letter from World Rugby, well then it has to be done, and if you can come to a compromise, well then you come to a compromise. But just for the sake of the countries as well, because that is a massive priority.
Yeah, and I guess from a wider point of view, you know, for rugby, they need these tier two nations to grow. I mean, the US is such a massive market, and as soon as they get the bug there, you might find yourself out of a job.
Yeah, it's always who, like, I've had this conversation with my brothers and my dad, and then people have mixed opinions, but it's going to be hard to compete in a World Cup if you're not together consistently. So yeah, that's the massive argument to push for, and I'm all for that. That's why it's important to me to always be there, and for other players that are overseas to get back and play, but it's not always the case.
So, I mean, I sort of take a passing interest in United States rugby. I'm not going to say that I'm completely squared away on it. But for you, what are the big games that you would like to target, or that the squad target? What's your England-Wales, for instance?
For playing against them? Or
For United States, what is the big grudge,
well,
grudge match?
Against Canada, when I first entered the setup, that was always the massive game. We played them twice prior to the World Cup, And like Canadian rugby's just going through a hard time at the moment, so
it that is,
they,
isn't it?
They're always grudge games. Like there is a lot of hatred between players, and it's kind of odd because I get on with a few of them where after the game you chat to them, but there isn't that sort of camaraderie there between both teams. So that is always pretty fierce game.
Well, I'm pretty sure on Twitter last week I saw the hashtag Canada Hate Week.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, but it's just the way it's been for so long.
Well, I suppose if you're playing in the English league and I'm trying to think of a couple of guys, so like Chris Robshaw and James Haskell, you probably know each other pretty well. I mean, England are almost like a club in themselves, aren't they? But if you are America versus Canada, I'm not entirely sure any of those lads play in the same clubs, unless they're playing in like Glendale or somewhere.
Yeah, well, it's funny, I think the first interaction was actually 2 years ago when a few of the Canadian lads were playing in the pro league in America, and a lot of the guys got on and had that chat with them. They're not actually too bad, and it's kind of like, yeah, obviously they're pretty much the same as us, like, so I don't get it. But I think that's where the Dragon, you would have known Dragon that was over here. He played with Sale, and he was from Canada, but he was he was playing in San Diego.
I never met him. There was a guy in Sale who played for United States who was captain. Is it Mike Petrie?
Petrie played as well, yeah.
Petrie. He played at Sale for a while. Yeah, there's a Canadian lad at Sale, was there?
Yeah, there was last year. I think his nickname was the Dragon. I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
No.
And Hercus as well.
Mike Hercus was the
10 as well for America.
No, he actually did play for the Dragons. Did he not?
Oh, no. The Canadian player that
played it was called the Dragon. But Mike Hercus played for the Dragons.
Oh, did he? Okay.
I think he did. Or maybe I've got that wrong. But I remember not so long ago, the American fly half, or scrum half, was playing at Waterloo. So Waterloo is a small club down the road. It's not small, actually. It's one of the grandest clubs in the country. It's certainly one of the oldest. But I think not this World Cup, because that would be you. Maybe the World Cup before that. The fly half there was playing club rugby just outside Liverpool.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So let's just rewind this a bit, because I made a joke about your accent earlier on. How did you end up playing for USA?
So once I finished my degree in Ireland, I kind of was playing in the semi-pro league, or the AIL it's called. So you have the amateurs and then the guy that comes back for the academies that play. And I did that for 3 years, and then I moved to New York, got a visa, got a job there, went out working with a few of my mates, and then stayed there 9 months, and then I kind of worked for 3 months, and then I got a bar job, and I had my parents visit me, and my dad wasn't really too happy with the situation because I had another 5 months of my visa left,
yeah,
and he didn't want me working in the bar for another 5 years, so he kind of just, through his connections with rugby, was looking at ways that I could stay there and study and play and go down and coach or play in the university. And something came up in the summer of a university in Atlanta, which was Life University, and there was a connection between two coaches. An Irish coach was coaching the US, and the other coach was the director of rugby there. So they put me in touch, and I ended up getting a 4-year student visa to go down there and study. So
brilliant.
True all that.
So how old were you when you moved over to the States? Oh, and also, what is Mr. McGinty Senior's connection with rugby? What's his background?
So my dad is was a teacher in Blackrock in the school.
Oh, they're pretty good.
And he would have coached in the school as well. So I think 1 year back in like 1998, his mate was taking a US All-American team to New Zealand, and my dad went down there and coached on the team. So he met a lot of the lads that were coaching. So when I went to New York, the coach at the time in New York was Mike Tolkien, who ended up becoming the US Eagles coach. So there's kind of a link there that if I was going to go to New York, would I be like, is there a position to go, is there a team to go out and play? So Mike Tolkien was the connection there. I think just the circle's so small in America that my dad got to know a lot of the guys who ended up progressing through the ranks as coaches in America.
So you went to New York, I assume, and please correct me if I'm wrong, basically for a bit of fun as a young man and just exploring the world, not to play rugby. This wasn't the plan.
Yeah, well, my mates were over there at the time and they got visas, and I had already told them I was going to come over. So it was actually around this time, 6 years ago that I flew over. And because I was going there, it was just a way to, would I be able to get like accommodation set up through a rugby club and that. So that was the angle I was kind of working, and the rugby club ended up were able to put me up for the rugby season.
Who did you play for there?
The New York Athletic Club. So okay. They're called NIAC, yeah. So there's NIAC and there's Old Blue are the two big teams in New York, and that's a big rivalry over there.
Old Blue, are they anything to do with the police force or something like that? Or is it for some other reason they're called that?
They may have. It might have been a police force team back in the day. I'm not too sure.
You have to do
research on that.
When I went over to New York last, I was lucky enough to play with Bayonne Bombers for.
I think the police force is it's New York Rugby Club is a police force team. I think.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then you have Old Blue as well.
So, what did you end up doing in life? University? What was your degree? What was your cover for being there?
I had a master's in exercise and sports science was the degree. So that was like 12 to 16 month degree. And then when I went back to the US Embassy in Dublin to go through and get the checks and do my interview, they ended up giving me a visa for 4 years. So I just was going to ride that out for as long as possible.
Did you get a full scholarship in Georgia?
So that university is one of few that they don't have. It's a small university, just started up an undergraduate program, didn't have a football team, so rugby and basketball were their two biggest sports.
Yeah.
So they were able to provide full scholarships, which is rare because you don't really get that
in
America. So part of it was that I was going to be coaching as well, so I do the coaching with the undergrad and the skills coach sort of role, as well as playing for the men's team too. So through that, I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship and housing as well on campus.
So hang on, before you went over then, you must have been on the radar of one of the provinces.
So when I was like 16 and 17, I was in the Leinster under 16 and 17 setups. And then after school, I had a 19s trials straight out of school, which is... You know, you have like 50 lads from the sort of top schools in Leinster or whatever. So I ended up breaking my wrist and I never competed for that. And then after that, the next year, the Leinster 20s, I wasn't involved. So I kind of just sort of like, I wasn't really on the radar, but I was just playing the under 20s rugby and competing with all these guys that were in those academies. So, I would have like the school's rugby and the Leinster setup is very competitive and the amount of players.
Yeah, to put it mildly.
Yeah. So at the time, I was playing scrum half, and John Cooney, who's now at Ulster, was the scrum half that I would have been competing with.
I've actually seen you play scrum off for Sale as well. I didn't realise that used to be your position.
Yeah. I played my first game at out half at under 19s. John Cooney went into the academy, but I was never really like neck and neck with John Cooney. He was from 18s, 19s, 20s. John Cooney was always the sort of nine coming through from my age group.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
So how much coaching did you actually get to do over at Life?
I would have done a lot. Like it's a like rugby mad. They've got like 40 to 50 students that come in the program, and you know, you'd have your gym in the morning, you'd do a skills session, you'd do your afternoon session, then probably a kicking session, and then I do my training in the evening as well with the men's team. So it was pretty full on.
So how many lads are like you then, like kind of from abroad but with roots in America or something like, which have brought across, or are they mostly American nationals that are playing there?
In life or for the national team?
In life.
In life there was, so at the time, the men's team had a lot of lads. It was four or five South Africans that were over doing the chiropractic degree. So I would have been mates with Josh Strauss's older brother.
Really?
Yeah, who was doing the chiropractic degree in Life University and was like was a freak of nature. So when he came over, he was a prop that was going to like go through the system and play for America.
Where's he playing now?
He's not playing. He ended up damaging a disc in his neck and he doesn't play anymore.
Oh my word.
So he stopped playing. But yeah, when I started playing with him, he was just like killing boys over there.
I've encountered Josh Strauss in a corridor, and he's an intimidating bloke.
So there was four or five South Africans. There was a Kiwi, and then there was a few Islander boys that were from the like Samoan fathers, Tongan fathers, but grew up on the west coast of
yeah.
America.
There's quite a lot of that,
yeah,
isn't
it? It's massive. Yeah, there's if you're going over to the west coast, like you'd find a lot of them. That's why that pro league pulled out. Like these guys that were probably just they're unfit, come from football programs, but when you put them on the road pitch, they were just annihilating each other, like really physical.
Oh, I mean, there are some fairly famous. Well, the most famous example, of course, is how I always get his name the wrong way around. Samu Manoa.
Samu Manoa, yeah.
You know, he is one of the most physical players on the planet.
Yeah. And now Joe Taufetti, that's at Worcester.
Yeah.
So he came into like a pre-World Cup camp around the same time I did, and had been playing the game a year and a half, 2 years.
Is that all he's been doing? Yeah.
So, and he's a brilliant player if he can just stay fit.
Yeah, he is a bit of a beast.
Yeah.
So from this is where it all gets a bit cloudy for me now. Did you just go then straight from Life and get picked up by Connacht? How did that move occur?
Yeah, so through the after the World Cup, obviously that like the hope was and that's like spotlight that you try to pick up something and get a professional gig and yeah, just got to send some stuff out and Pat Lamb got in touch and then I went down to Connacht and like a week after the World Cup had finished, I was moving to Galway.
Now, just for the listeners, remind us who was in your group in the World Cup?
We had South Africa, Scotland, Japan and Samoa.
That's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was it like going out against South Africa?
I that was the one game I didn't play.
Joking? How come?
And that was in the new stadium as well then in London too, where West Ham are now at. So I didn't get to play in that game. So yeah,
injured.
Just not selected. Oh. We had played. Yeah, we had Samoa, Scotland, then we had them, and then we played Japan like in a 4-day turnaround. So. I didn't play that game.
Absolutely gutted.
I know, yeah. I remember walking out just through the tunnel and having Haban and the sheer size of the man.
In fairness, they were probably relieved that you weren't playing.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. It's a great experience. It's funny because my first test for America was on the West Coast. And I'd just come from probably playing like your university men's level in America. So with the team we had a lot of foreigners. Then we had a lot of the American lads that were there were training 3 times a week. So they're always ahead of, we were always ahead of every other team. So we were beating them by high numbers and then played against Samoa, who Johnny Leota and TJ were both playing. So I remember that was, I don't know, I remember halftime of that game thinking they can't be all like this. Like my body was in bits. I'd made numerous tackles. Like it was just a very physical game.
TJ in particular is just a nightmare with ball in hand.
Yeah, he is. But I like to say that I smashed him in that game. But no, there's no video evidence of me hitting him.
Maybe he just wasn't caught on camera, mate.
No, it wasn't. But we had a wrestle there before I actually did my knee in and I beat him. So I just like the point that out.
Did you ever get, were you around when Vladim Kobolash was about?
No, he left the year before I arrived, so he left 2 years ago.
So apparently he was the best wrestler bar none at Sale Sharks.
Was he?
Oh yeah, like to the point that not only would he beat lads, he would beat them whilst he was laughing.
Yeah, I've got Johnny's been training pretty hard to get his knee right, but I'm giving him a title shot probably in about 4 weeks when my knee's fully mended. So,
How is the knee?
It's good, yeah. It's at the time I just feared the worst and I was just more of a shock to what happened. But and the manner in which it happened, because I heard a pop and just the way I fell, it was just in agony. But the specialist is pretty happy. So on Monday, at the time he said I was very lucky not to blow the whole knee out. Oh. So. That would have been obviously 6 or 7 months, which would have been disastrous. But it's thankfully no surgery.
So I didn't actually see the game. What happened?
Oh, we had a botched exit, and the ball had fallen to me. And stupidly, I was on my line. I should have just tried to like carry.
Mm.
But I tried to just clear it as fast as I could, and it got charged down. So it fell right to the hooker. So he's just I just tried to tackle him and keep him up high.
Oh, no.
And then as he went to deck, I was the only sort of...
Oh, so you're falling backwards.
I was the only sale player in the ruck, and three lads sort of cleared me out. But I just remember hearing the pop and the position I was in. I was pleading with the Harlequins lads to just like get off me. I need to move my leg. And they, to be fair to them, they were very helpful with me. But just very stupid.
So what was the diagnosis then? Because I do remember coming to the press day like the week after, because you had to wait for the swelling to come down. And but they were saying that it wasn't as bad as they feared.
Yeah, so it's a grade 3 tear. So. The MCL doesn't actually need any surgery, so that's the positive about it. So it's 10 to 12 week injury, but it's like if we had, like, I know there's that break March 3rd, but like if there was a game March 10th I could play, or if it's going well, geez, I'd love to push it. I don't know if I want to push it, but if it feels really good and I'm progressing well and the physio say I could go back earlier, you know, I definitely would, but with that break it gives me another like 7 weeks.
Yeah, so, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So are you able to do any jogging on it or weights? Or
I've been doing a lot of weights, making some good progress in that department. I just started doing some cycling and farmer lifts and all that, so the next few weeks will be very tough because I'll be just putting more load on it.
Yeah. When you've got a knee injury, is that just a good excuse to go into the gym and finally do some like t-shirt weights, a few extra curls and shrugs?
Well, I get a bit of stick for neglecting that area, but it has, because to be honest, just the way it's been, and you're away with America, and then you get like, you don't get a full pre-season, so you come back, maybe the lads have been back 4 or 5 weeks when I've been getting back as I've been away with America. So there's not that sort of, I don't get that load that they've had, and the fitness and the heavy weights and all that, those sessions. I'm just kind of straight into it and get up to speed and then play the like first preseason friendly in whatever, 3 weeks' time. So it's kind of helped me in that area where, you know, because the S&C side of my game is like my strength is a weakness, I'd say. So it's definitely given me a bit of time to develop that.
When we say the S&C side, I mean, do you mean your cardio or your actual?
Well, I know. I shouldn't say S&C. I should just say strength. Yeah, just my strength in general or my upper body. My cardio is always, I've always been pretty fit.
Yeah, because I mean, players are getting bigger and bigger and bigger now. I mean, it's going to be, there's going to be a time. I was going to say going to be a time. There already is a time when players. I mean, you're not a small bloke. What are you? 5'10", 5'11"?
I go 6'1".
You're not.
I'm
6'1". I'm sure I was taller than you. Walking in.
If the floorboards are crooked upstairs, we stand up. I reckon I'm taller.
I'm gonna have
you.
To check those stats, mate. I'm not convinced. But we'll,
I'm definitely 6'1".
Right. Okay. We'll go with 6'1".
Yeah. No. But I've always been like. I was always very small, so that's why I was playing scrum half. I was very short growing up, so I probably took a...
But you got to 6'1" at Sale.
Growth spurt around 19, 20. So, yeah, I reckon I'm 6'1 now. But I've never been strong in the gym, so that's why this has been a great opportunity for me to improve that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny you say that, because one of the guys that I've interviewed previously blew up his knee over in France. And he just said, like, the progress he's made in the gym, because he doesn't have the workload of, you know, games and all the rest of it, is just immense.
Like, yeah, no, it is very good. And I've been, like, keeping track of it and keeping the numbers. So just to make sure I am progressing. I have a 4-week, because Byron's now injured. So I've got a 4-week body transformation challenge with him as well.
He's actually pretty ripped, though.
No, he's not.
He is. He's pretty. He's pretty lean. I'll give him that much.
Hey, he is for the amount of cookies and all the stuff he'd be eating. But we had a really tough session actually yesterday. So now it's good, because Johnny's probably a bit more. He's starting to do his running and that. So
of course you've got your little injury club now.
Yeah. There's a few of us in there.
So who's out at the moment? You, Johnny, and Byron.
Rabs is just carrying he's got a problem with his calf at the moment. James O'Connor.
Oh, right.
He's
okay.
Having a problem with his calf. So, and then
who's the best athlete?
Tom Curry's there as well.
Who's Tom Curry's the hooker?
No, Tom Curry.
Oh, Curry. I thought he was at Wasps. Who is the best athlete in that little group?
In the injured group.
In the injury party.
Best athlete. don't know. James Conner's in good shape now. I'd say Johnny Leota. I just think it's the way those that they're molded, like they're just freaks.
Yeah.
So for a man of 37,
he's. Oh, yeah,
he's 34. He's 34 last month.
So, no, I watched him in like an A League game not so long ago, because that's the kind of guy that I am. I go and watch the A team occasionally. And, like, maybe he wasn't as fast as the young Wasps lads, but every time he hit contact, it was like three or four Wasps boys, three or four 19 year olds hanging onto his calves and stuff.
Yeah, no, he's very physical and dynamic. Like, they're just, he's a good athlete.
Yeah, well, hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, no, I think he's, we'll probably be back around the same time. I think he's looking to get back for that, just the game straight after the break.
Mm. Now, you're a bit of a weird one in this respect, right? Which yeah. is, I don't know of many rugby players who've got this sort of cult status in not just one small rugby community, which is the United States, because trust me, if you speak to the boys, and I've got a few friends that do podcasts about United States rugby.
Yeah, I met them.
Yeah, yeah, the good blokes, and, yeah, you know, it's AJ McGinty everything.
I
really.
Don't know about that.
But also, I had the pleasure of chatting to some guys that do a Connacht podcast, and they hold you in equally high regard. You've got like these dual little cult followings.
I don't know. They're well, both great place. Those the lads, the boys do the one in America. They're from Atlanta.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
Yeah, I got to meet them when I was over there last year. And I don't know, Connacht's just the people in Connacht are just great people. Like, everyone gets along. It's a great little city in Galway. So really enjoy my time there.
Now, one of the things I love most about rugby is following teams who people wouldn't necessarily always follow. So that's why I love going to all the Tier 2 stuff. I went to watch Georgia recently, as over in Madrid this week, checking out the National Stadium for their game against Germany. And something which I'd love you to talk about is your game in Siberia.
Oh, yeah.
So how did that come about?
So that was... that was part of the European Cup. Mm-hmm. So NSI, now there's two teams in it, but they were the only team in it that year. So they were the first team in it.
NSI and Krasnoyarsk now.
Krasnoyarsk. And that's where we played that game. So the deal for that year was that one team would have to go all the way to Krasnoyarsk, because that's where they're based.
Yeah.
And then the other team would play in somewhere near Moscow.
Yeah, I think they do some of their games in Moscow, but they took one game to Siberia for some reason. I don't know.
So we it was just picked out of a hat, and Connacht were the team that would have to do it. So it was a long journey, because we flew, it was like 3-hour flight to Moscow, and then from Moscow it was another 5-hour journey. So between the time zones,
wow,
the time zones, we played at 3 in the day, so it was like 5-hour change. 3 in the day, and it was on at 10 in the morning.
Hang on.
Over here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, so it was very far. Like, and it was, honestly, it was a scene. I remember coming off the plane, and there was no other planes. Every other plane had snow on it. There was just massive big trees. Like, there was nobody around. I took a photo of it, because it was like something out of the Rocky movie. I think we arrived 4 or 5 days in advance.
Oh, really? So you had time to acclimatise then?
Yeah, and our training sessions that week were actually on at 6 in the morning.
Oh, so you could adjust?
Yeah, so we could adjust. So all our training sessions that week were on at 6 in the morning. And then, yeah, just to get us used to, because we obviously had an early flight out as well. So, it was actually fine getting over there, because we had a chartered plane, so it was all the team had your own row, and then a few fans and all the medical staff and the coaching staff. But on the way back, the game itself was played in minus 26 degrees.
Now, were you aware, did they tell you that in advance it was going to be minus 20?
Well, we were told in advance that the stadium was sold out, 20,000 people are coming to the game, the pitch has undersoil heating system, so there'll be no snow on the pitch.
Perfect.
But it will be very cold. And Ireland actually played Russia there, I can't remember.
You are right. They did a World Cup qualifier, didn't they?
Yeah, Ireland played Russia there probably like 10 years
previous. I'm pretty sure I remember Keith Wood in the airport. I think it might be that long ago.
Yeah. So Ireland had played a game there. But the conditions were horrific. So you step outside the hotel that we were staying at, and it was just, you needed to get like the full face mask. And
so when was there like a moment of realization when you were stepping off the plane, like, this isn't going to be normal?
No, it definitely wasn't. We had our training session, and we had to work around the times that we were going to have like the hottest part of the day, which was nothing, and all the buildings that are around us were just like run down apartments, like just
it's very Siberian.
Siberian.
I've watched you a few times play. You're a very skillful guy. How does that climate, how does it affect like your handling and stuff like that, and just your ability to do things?
To be honest, I was probably very fortunate because I was touching the ball a lot.
Imagine being a winger.
The wingers were freezing. I was touching the ball a lot, but it was just so hard to hold the ball. But even kicking, like, it was like kicking a rock. Like, the ball wouldn't travel at all. Like, you'd, from about 25 metres out, that was like the kicking range, because if you go any further, I had a kick from the touchline that dropped.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Short, and then the next, we got our long-distance kicker, the same kick, and he missed short as well. So kicking was a big problem. But the conditions, because the pitch actually didn't have undersoil heating. There was probably 300 people in the stands.
Oh, so there wasn't 20,000 there?
No, it was minus 26 degrees. It was freezing. I remember at half time, we all had the hot drinks and the hot water bottles to hold. And
does that help? I can't imagine that helping.
And we were getting rubs on our legs and our hands, and knee Adeoloken, who was like Irish, Nigerian background, but he used to live in Ireland. And
well, more importantly than any of that, he's on the wing.
Yeah, his fingers were purple. He had his hot drink in his hand. It was just spilling everywhere. Like, his hand was like uncontrollable. And I had two like physios on trying to heat him up, should I say. And then when we went out second half, the weather dropped again. So and to be fair, the NSI boys were like feeling it just as much as we were. They weren't used to that either, so.
Because they're not actually from there, are they?
Yeah, they're not. So they were feeling it as well. They just had a Kiwi guy come over and land the day before, and
can you imagine?
Yeah. I think he signed up to play for them for 3 months. I don't think it suited them too much. But
tell you what, there is one thing, isn't there, going to New York and doing some bar work and playing socially, and another thing going to Krasny Yar for a few weeks.
Actually my starting debut as well, I think. What, too, yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, because I'd signed late in the season after the World Cup, and then I'd come off the bench once or twice, and then that was my debut.
Now, world rugby regulations state you're not allowed things like, do you like tights, like compression layers?
Yeah, we weren't allowed to wear them. So we went down to the lads that bought, we had brought the Under Armour, the skins, but everyone had gone down to the shopping centre and bought like two more, like we had to wear three or four.
So upper body, I mean, you're not warm, but you've got three or four base layers on. Lower body, you're just going to have to deal with it. Yeah.
And just to stop it rolling up, there was heavy tape and everything. And the lads on the bench had like blankets and everything,
Amazing. Well, the guy I spoke to, guy called William Davis, actually, who does a Connacht podcast. He actually went to watch that game. So you probably encountered him on the Charter flight.
We definitely did, yeah, because a few of the Connacht fans had, like, and we are so lucky that our journey was, like, a chartered flight and it was all for us, but they had, like, connecting flights. They had such a long journey, and, yeah, they stayed in the same hotel with us too. Like, unbelievable support.
It's
like,
incredible. It's quite something, isn't it? Well, he was saying, the reason I brought his name up is because he was saying that his iPhone didn't work. It was so cold, the iPhone started, like, shutting down.
Yeah, no, it was mad. But that it was great. We got the win, and then and got a bonus point win as well, which was really good. And then on the way back, the plane had shut down, one of the parts had frozen, or there was a mechanical fault. So the way back, we were meant to leave Saturday night and get in Sunday, and we couldn't fly that night, so we had to go back, get a new hotel. Then the next day we went to the airport to fly out. Our visas had run out, so we couldn't leave, so we had to sort out our new visas. So we went to leave Saturday, get back Sunday. We didn't get home till Tuesday morning as well. The way back,
amazing.
We had like three different parties returning. Like, guys went through London, Amsterdam, all different flights.
Is that because different guys from different nationalities had different visa requirements?
No. All of us couldn't leave because we our visa had expired.
Oh, nightmare.
Yeah. And then we had an Irish guy that was our translator, and he was obviously like in a very difficult position trying to get it all sorted. But we weren't allowed to leave on the Sunday.
Bloody! I forgot to ask. Did you win?
Yeah. We beat them. We were the only side to beat them away. They won the rest of their home games, and we beat them. We were the only team to beat them that year.
That's awesome.
I think Newcastle. And
yeah, Newcastle gone down.
And Brieve. Brieve lost them.
Yeah, I'm sure Krasnoyarsk have beaten a few big teams in the past. I'm sure. Who's the other team that have got a scalp? Maybe it's one of the Romanian teams have beat. I'm sure they've beaten a Premiership side or a Pro 14 side.
Really? Yeah. It's just now, crazy place to go.
After you played that sort of game, I mean, the game sounds intense. Were you in any state of mind, you and the boys afterwards, to have like a few beers? Because it is a unique experience.
Yeah, well, I think at the airport, once we were told like we're not, because we had Brieve the next week at home.
Yeah.
And then once we were told that we're not going to get back, like a few of the boys, or it's delayed, so we have a few beers. And then, on the way back, because we were so delayed, we were trying to get back on to Irish time zone. So, a few lads went out, and then the meeting the next day was at an early time. So, yeah, a few of the boys missed the meeting because went to a nightclub and had a pretty good time. One hell of an experience. So,
it's amazing to think how much money is spent in rugby and trying to make teams bond and, you know, find new ways to improve performance or what have you. I mean, Warren Gatland started putting his players in a fridge. I imagine a quick trip to Krasnoyarsk on a brutal tour might just do the trick.
Yeah. God. I still remember how cold that was just from the knees beside me. Like, he was just shivering so much.
Now, you were saying that was your first stop.
Yeah.
So that must have been the year before Connacht won the Pro 12, as it was.
No, that was
was that the same year?
Same year, yeah. 2015, 2016 season.
Now, this I find quite interesting. You weren't the starting fly half when you went there.
No. So they had Jack Hardy was the 10, and then Craig Ronson was also 10, but he played 12 too.
Mm.
So they were kind of both dueling it out for 10. And then actually, at the time, Shane O'Leary, who's now the Canadian out half, he was suffering from head problems, so they were just short of a 10. So that's why I got signed on.
Oh, right. So were you on a short term deal or?
No, it was a 1 year deal plus the one. And then I think the 2 weeks following that, I made my second start against Munster away, and then I did something to my knee that required like a scope job.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like I was out for 4 weeks, which brought me to after Christmas, and then. Yeah, and then we actually went through a bit of a rough spell and then got back to winning ways. But Jack had gone away. So after Christmas, then I was like competing with Jack, and Craig was just staying as the 12. And then Jack had gone away, and he had a bad injury while he was away, so that ruled him out for the rest of the season, pretty much.
Who was Jack away with?
No, we had like a throwing the Pro 12 on the internationals. You get that window where you get away. So he had gone away and injured himself just on his holiday.
Oh, sorry, I'm with you. Right, yeah.
So when
on his holiday, doing what?
I came off a slide, water slide, and he ruptured his spleen.
No.
Yeah. He was in a bad way, and he'd like lost a lot of weight. But no, it's good. He's like he came back, and he's
Jesus.
Yeah. It was really bad.
These things only happen to pro sportsmen.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I know. Literally hundreds of thousands of people go down the same slide with no issues whatsoever. But
yeah.
If you get paid for use of your body, you guarantee you're gonna rupture a spleen doing something.
Yeah, and I think there was like. It happened in Dubai as well, and there was a lot. He didn't know it for like another 24 hours, so he was just kind of, he was taking painkillers, but it was just in complete agony. So, after that, then I kind of got like a full run of games for the rest of the season.
Now that's actually incredible, isn't it? Because if you think about where you came from and how your rugby career progressed, as much as anything, it was luck that you got the opportunity, and how important just having the opportunity is.
Yeah, exactly. And I was very fortunate just how it all fell, and the timing with me finishing my degree and that the World Cup year, and you know, there was the US were in need of a 10 as well at the time too, so. The current 10 there had picked up a few injuries, so he wasn't at full health too. So the minute like I got in, I got a good few run of games. So yeah, I was very fortunate.
Did you want to be a professional rugby player? Was that always the goal?
I'd always played growing up, and like Blackrock is one of the top schools in Leinster. I was playing at a competitive level all my life, and one year I stopped and I gave it up to play football.
Yeah.
At like 16, and I actually wanted to be growing up. I wanted to be a professional soccer player, but I went back to the rugby after the year, and I'd just be quite driven that I want to play at the highest level no matter what I'm doing.
Mm. So it was always sport then. It wasn't like
yeah, definitely was always sport. So academically, I wasn't the sharpest tool. So. It was always something to do in sport, and that going over to America, I kind of played the AIL, which is the highest level for your amateur on the under 20s, I was playing at a competitive level that wasn't professional, so I didn't want to have that in my head where I'd look back and think, oh, you know, I didn't want to be that lad that said I could have done that, because I don't like those people like that that say that. You're either good enough or you're not, and that's something that my brother had always told me. In everything, you're either good enough or you're not. Don't say you could do that. So when I got that opportunity to go to America and I moved down to Atlanta, that was like a second shot. It was kind of like, it's a long way away, but if things go right and you work pretty hard, there's an opportunity to play for America. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm gonna give that my best shot.
Yeah, well, I mean, then to do that, and then to be winning the Pro 12 the next year. When you first got into that team, into that Connacht team, then how did the coaches kind of ease you into it? Because they're playing a different system to most other people. You know, you're new to the Irish game. I mean, that's probably your first senior appearance, right?
Definitely. I think Pat Lamb had been there. That was his third season, so he had installed pretty much everything. Everybody knew exactly what their role was, and everything was very detailed, very structured. So it did take a bit of getting used to and finding my feet, but there was just a massive amount of learning, and just like from the coaches to the players, like educating them about the game. And so I've always been like fascinated with rugby and interested in the dynamics of it, the systems of it, like in every facet of the game, bar probably the scrum and lineout, which I wouldn't have a clue. Learning a bit from just watching Bryn operate the lineout, but I'd just be very interested in like all facets of the game. So when I was learning this stuff, like it was really exciting for me and understanding it, and then you know, being able to pass it on to the lads in Life University where I'd come from. So. Just be a sponge, pretty much, and go with it.
It's really interesting to say it was so structured, because when everyone thinks of Connacht, when they win it, they don't think of structured rugby, but it's kind of how much freedom you have within the structure, if that makes sense. Yeah. Or how much the structure allows you to be creative.
Yeah, definitely. It's I think, like, when a new coach comes in and is trying to implement that much structure, there's going to be resistance to it because, oh, we've never done that, or that's not how we do things.
Yeah.
And I just the, as you said, the amount of creativity it looked like lads had, and they did, it actually brought out the best in players by 15 lads being cohesive and sticking to the structure. It proved to be really successful. And one thing it was always said was like, oh, how, like, one, like, each week a different winger might score tries, or this winger score tries, the fullback score tries, and how is he doing that? And it would always be said, he does that in training each week, you know what I mean? Whatever's happening on the pitch, we've done in training, we've repped it so many times, you know. So there was just a massive amount of detail, and I think that's what made it easy for me to come in, because any call that I would make, it would be the same call that every single 10 that would play would make. There was no, I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah.
Which I think you might have a lot. So, it took me a few months to get up to speed, but it was a very easy like place to learn and fit into.
Now, that's interesting. So, you know, the system helped you play. When you came over to Sale, the system is different. Did you struggle to adjust them?
Yeah, definitely did. Just on like, I did struggle with the attack and how we were attacking. And I just, the way, getting used to it, and I just didn't, me making my calls. And at the time there was new, well, Strings was there, Mike Phillips had come in, there was new 10s, and there was also a lot of new signings in the squad.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of changes. And
I think 7 new signings that?
Yeah.
That summer, something like that. It was a big turnover.
Yeah, and then you had the academy guys in as well, and the Currys were getting a lot of game time too. So, yeah, it was a big turnover. So, when I look back on it, it was very frustrating. I wish I had performed better, but maybe voiced my opinion a lot more. But I didn't want to be. I'm a first year professional. This is my second year. I'm coming into a new environment. And it's the first environment I've been to where I don't really know anybody, because when I went to Connacht, I knew a few guys because they were played in Leinster. When I went to America, I knew people, you know what I mean? It was just, I was just trying to find my feet, and I didn't want to be a guy that is always talking, because then you might be a guy that thinks you know it all, and I don't know it all.
What
so.
A weird situation, because I never really thought about that. You are a second year pro, and you're a second year pro who only really got established second half of the season.
Yeah.
But Dimes has brought you in to run the show. You know, you're actually the guy who everyone's depending on. So it's a really tricky situation. It's not like you've been there and done it. Well, you have. You're actually coming over as a champion. You know, after 8 games or whatever it is.
Yeah, by the end of that season, I think I had like 20 appearances and 15 starts.
Yeah.
So it was, and I hadn't.
And also, how do you go about? I mean, if you did decide to be the guy who talks, or how do you go about telling Mike Phillips and Stringer where to throw a ball?
Well, see, the thing is, I do when I get to this like one to one situations and I'm talking with those two, it was I'm going to ask them questions and get their information. Obviously, years of experience, a lot of knowledge, so I'm going to gain as much as I can of them, and then I'm going to bounce my idea off them and see if they like it. And like a lot of the stuff I was saying, they did agree with. So it was just about having that on, like getting now 30 lads to like to buy into that without being this like know-it-all.
Yeah.
And I probably should have been more bossy, but it was kind of just like I gotta get to know everybody first before I can like boss it, I guess.
I mean, I was gonna ask you, like, what would you do differently if you could do it again? But I guess you shouldn't really do anything differently, because it's taken you some time to do it the way that you wanted. But now we're, you know, X amount of months down the road now. You've fitted in brilliantly. Dimes actually referred to you as a premiership animal, which high praise indeed.
Yeah, I like, obviously my biggest regret, I hurt my hamstring at the first game of the season, and then I just don't think I just don't think we had a system that it was like 15 to whatever 30 players could step in and out of and be cohesive. And that was because there was a lot of changes, and there was even a lot of changes in the background of the club with new owners, yeah, and all that. So there was a lot of hype in that, and then it was like getting to know Deeks and working with him and learning from him as well. And I think this year, this year, I feel we're going along steady. There's definitely a lot more in us, but from a like attacking point of view, there's a hell of a lot more consistency to what we do, and there's a lot more knowledge about what we're doing and understanding, I feel. So I think like we're making a lot of progress. I wish it happened the previous year, but it just takes time, and you got to build foundations and build your relationships, because that's the most important thing.
Well, funnily enough, have you ever heard of a guy called Ben Darwin? I keep talking about Ben Darwin all the time, but he used to be the prop for Australia. So I interviewed him a while ago, and he talks about contractual stability and with different players fitting into schemes at different times. And he said, for fly halves, you're looking for about 3 years before you've really settled in and start playing your best rugby.
Yeah, I think like that's probably.
I mean, it took you 20 games to win the Pro 12, and then
I think that's 20 for me playing. But then, like, I still think that if like whatever 10 would have been there for that Connacht v Leinster final, we still would have won.
Do you really think that, though?
Yeah, that's the confidence I had in what we were doing.
Wow, I mean that's quite modest of you, but it's also quite some statement and quite some confidence in Pat Lam.
Yeah. Well, I just think the Pat Lam, the other coaches, and just what was happening in there. But it took. I know Connacht had come a long way, but then for Pat Lam, it was his third year, so it took him 3 years to implement what he wanted his side to play, I guess. So, that was just the belief I had in what we were doing, the players and that.
So how do the two systems differ then, Connacht and Sale? Because they're all very, very different.
Yeah, no, I think, well, right now, I think there's been a shift in the last few years to how the teams are defending. So, like, even last year, there was a lot of changes in the system Connacht were trying to use, and teams are starting to combat that.
Yeah.
And it's the same system if we look, and it's one of the things that was brought to my attention by John Mitchell, because we went to America, this is how he wanted us to defend. He wanted us to be super aggressive, get off the line, and he would always show clips of the Hurricanes doing it in Super Rugby, and that was the year the Hurricanes won the league, and they'd scored so many points,
yeah,
from turnovers and from defensive errors and interceptions, and they defend the same way, that same style that Saracens do. Just get up fast, get set and go. And it doesn't really matter where the ball's going. You're just putting pressure and getting in the out half's face. So, and they've been incredibly successful the way they're doing that. So I think the way teams are trying to play more expansive, and I think you see that with Northern Hemisphere Rugby now in the international, yeah, games, a more expansive game. Playing with, I mean, Connacht was 9-10 a pot of forwards, but when you're getting hit with a lot of line speed, that's going to be very difficult. Where now with Sale, and I really enjoy the system we're doing, and I think last year we were poor at running the system, and this year we're good at running the system.
I agree with that actually. So last year it was coming, you know, in fits and starts it looked ace,
yeah,
but generally speaking
it just wasn't consistent.
Yeah.
So I think this year we're a lot more consistent, and that might be lads playing together a lot, or being around each other and understanding each other from a back's point of view and our positioning, and then the new signings that have come in as well. But there's just definitely more consistency to what we're doing. I still think we can get better, but it's definitely moving in the right place. But it's just a mold where it's more of 9 first phase and the structure you play off that, or what you want to do off that phase and what you can do out the back of that pod of three. So, which is like the most popular system I think you'll see around.
Yeah, and not to get too Cell Shock centric, but what I love about going down to watch Cell Shocks is if you manage to catch Deeks talking about lines and running angles and you know what he does well, the details that he adds into the game, tremendously underrated. Not underrated, because people that know him rate him highly.
Yeah,
but not very well known out outside of the immediate, you know, Sale Sharks universe.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of what you coach in rugby union is actually taken from rugby league, and he's got such a knowledgeable background of rugby league and those lines running. That's one thing when I moved here was like just straightening up or holding your feet and not being too aggressive at the line, and then the line of the person outside you. So what was happening a lot with me was I'd be trying to like get to an outside defender, but the attacker outside me was trying to pin that defender inside. So we were actually both running at the same hole.
Yeah.
And one man can defend both of us, and I don't have the option out the back. So I was struggling a lot with that. And I think from my perspective, there's definitely a time, like, because the previous year it was a bit different. So I was just adjusting to that. And there's always a time and a place for both things. So like there's more ways to do one thing and more than one way to be successful. So there was definitely an adjustment period for me doing that. And I sometimes don't do it, but sometimes I do it, and it's just getting the balance right.
It is, yeah. And I don't think people in rugby union understand really how much effort and skill goes into the basics of something like a 2-1 or just those rugby league lines. I mean, the nth degree of detail is applied to it.
Yeah, definitely, and it is like something that our forwards are like they work their socks off, and their skill level is improving, and because we've been more consistent with our system, I think they're finding themselves in similar positions, so they're always utilizing the same skill or the tip pass, or you know, their confidence that is growing because they're getting more and more reps at doing that, which is always massive, and it's the same in sort of our training during the week. Like if I feel I'm kicking well during the week, I'm going to carry that into the game.
Yeah,
the forwards getting a lot of tip passes or pullback passes or carries, they're going to have a lot more confidence in the game. It's just natural.
I always love it when a group of forwards get a new skills coach, because people just assume forwards can't really handle the ball, and then you put them with a skills coach for any length of time. In fact, any group of players, if you put them with a good skills coach, you'll be amazed what they can achieve just with that. Yeah. You know, just that bit of assistance.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was one of the things when I left Ireland, but just hearing about Leinster, and when Joe Schmidt had come in and he was telling them he's going to make them the best passers of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're an experienced pro and you hear that, you're like, I can already do that. But
yeah, I'm already pretty good at that, thanks.
Yeah, the detail level he brought to their pass and what he wanted, and yeah, and just making sure they're not just working on the stuff they're average at. They've got to be working at stuff they're perfecting.
Now, looking back at the last, I mean, you must look at back at the last 3 years and think, bloody hell, how did all that happen? but like you've achieved a level of success now, which I guess. Oh, sorry, that is Tim Cocker calling me. I'll have to hang up on him. Sorry, Tim. Yeah. Where was I going with that? Yeah,
the last 3 years.
Yeah, you're at a certain level of success, which you probably, when you're working in a bar in New York, you weren't expecting to get.
I had a dream.
Yeah, well, do you ever kind of think, you know, I would actually quite like to be playing in one of the provinces, or do you ever think along those lines? Are you just very happy the way it's all turned out?
Yeah, it's worked out really well, and like I'm gotta be, like, obviously just the support I've had, and extremely thankful to like my family and my parents and for allowing me to do that, and I just want more, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just not like, it's been great, and I don't know. Just I don't
move
really
to Wasps.
Get...
Don't do that.
No. I just want more, and I want to get as good as I can, and just keep improving as a player, and like I'd love to win silverware at Sale. So just working as hard as I can. I can't really look back at how good it's been, but it has been an amazing experience, but I just want more for
I do honestly think that if Sale can just keep this group of boys together and stay under the radar, there's every chance. I mean, I think top six, well, they're already in top six, but I think top four is not unachievable, and the next run of games is going to be absolutely critical.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why it's important. Like it wasn't a pretty win, but it was a win against London Irish, and just started for this block because we've got this block. We have only one home game, that's against Sarries, obviously this Friday. So that's going to be a huge game for us. But then we go away, and obviously Northampton have sort of turned things around, but they're definitely beatable. So we just without getting ahead of ourselves, just take it.
Let me guess, one game at a time.
Game by game.
Excellent. Yeah. Right, well, AJ, I've kept you here for like an hour now. We've been chatting away for 58 minutes.
Your listeners will be falling asleep.
thank you so much for coming down and doing this in person, because it does make a huge difference. Can we find you on social media and stuff to find out what escapades you're up to with the USA or what have you?
I don't really have them, but I don't really use them too much. Yeah, to be honest, I just.
Are you not plugging like protein shakes and?
No, I just feel real awkward about doing that. Like, who cares that I'm doing that kind of thing? But
well, I mean, it depends who wants to push their products. I saw.
I don't carry enough followers or carry enough weight to be like, hey, give me something free and I'll push your products.
Did you know the worst one I saw the other day was Scott Williams, the Welsh centre, pushing a water cooler. Thank you for the water cooler, game changer.
A few of us. I've been messaged this week. I don't know how I was messaged, because I don't have any weight in the social media, but messaged to do like high smile.
What's high smile?
Like teeth whitening.
Oh, what? How is it?
Yeah.
I'll do that.
So you might see a few cringy posts about teeth whitening coming out.
With your gum shielding as well.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Just a last thought. Do you know whose career that yours sort of reminds me of a little bit? Gareth Steenson.
Because I guess he left Ireland.
Yeah, ended up in Doncaster, did well there, over to Exeter Chiefs in a team building.
Yeah.
You know, not really much known about him until everybody knew about him, if that makes sense.
I knew about him.
Did you?
Well, no. My cousin was captain of his Ireland under 21 team that went to the first Irish under 21 team to play in the final. They got beaten by New Zealand in the final in Glasgow, I think it was. And I was at the game, yeah. Steenson was the 10.
Yeah, because he flew under the radar for a long, long time. And then all of a sudden...
Unbelievable.
A tremendous player. Anyway, I said that I was going to let you go. Yeah. So I shall let you go, mate.
Brilliant. All right, thanks very much for having me.
Thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.